The Dr. Decker Weiss Show. Now here's your host, one of the leading integrative physicians in the world, Dr. Decker Weiss.
The do's and don'ts of napping. I'm a napper, I confess. I don't need a lot of sleep, but I do love that occasional nap, especially I live in Arizona. And during those summer afternoons, if I have a rare day off or it's a Saturday, if I see that couch around 2, I am out from about 2 to 3, and I don't know if it's a good thing or not. So we called in an expert, author of the book, Good Night, The Sleep Doctor's 4-Week Program to Better Sleep and Better Health. Michael J. Bruce, PhD, is a clinical psychologist, a diplomat of both the American Board of Sleep Medicine and the fellow of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. Dr. Bruce, am I doing okay by taking my nap, or is it a wrong thing to do?
Well, first of all, I live in Arizona as well, and when the beautiful weather as we're having right now, it's kind of hard not to lie in a hammock and take a little snooze on Saturday afternoon.
Oh, it's great, isn't it? I love it.
It is. It's awesome. But one of the things I'll tell you is napping is actually a really good thing in many, many cases, except the one caveat is people with insomnia. We know the data is very consistent to show that the last time that you were asleep affects how long it takes you to fall asleep if you have insomnia. That being said, if the last time a person with insomnia was asleep was at 6:30 in the morning, they're going to fall asleep much faster than if it was 2:30 in the afternoon. So what we try to do is keep that sleep drive high in people with insomnia. And quite frankly, with people having a regular sleep schedule, it's only going to help them out. But let's say, you know, you had a bad night, you got in really late, or you had to get up really early, and you only got 5.5 hours, and you really need 7, it's perfectly okay to take a nap. But there are actually several different types of naps that are out there.
Okay. So can you take us through those, please?
Sure. So the first one is what, you know, people kind of call the power nap. This is a 25-minute or so nap. You don't want to go much over that because, quite frankly, what ends up happening is you end up getting into deep sleep, and then you wake up and you feel worse than when you started. I have patients tell me all the time, oh, my gosh, I slept for an hour and I felt terrible. Well, if they'd only slept for 25 minutes, they'd probably feel a whole lot better. The second type of nap is a full sleep cycle nap. That usually lasts about an hour and a half or 90 minutes. That is a great nap to have, especially if you've missed an hour or two of sleep, because it really helps you kind of make that up and get back into it. The third type of nap is kind of an interesting one. I call it the Napa latte. Listen to this. What you do is if you've got somebody who's got to be raring to go and they're just dog tired, they go and they get a cup of coffee, usually drip coffee, which has the highest caffeine content. They cool it down, and they drink the whole thing really quickly. Then they take a 25-minute nap. By the time they're waking up, the caffeine is hitting them. They've reduced their sleep drive. They're good for 4 hours, guaranteed.
Have you done that yourself?
Absolutely. Works like a charm.
I think I've done it by accident. Because I do. I think I have. You've kind of let some light into my eyes, because when I was in training, I would run these crazy hours in the hospitals, and I used to try and take kind of that 25-minute power nap. But it seemed if I went about 35 or 40, I just, man, I was dragging for about an hour trying to get my you know, life back. But if I made it to that hour and a half, I swear I could go like a whole day again. And you talk about the 5 stages of sleep. Now what I'm getting is I was able to probably get most of those 5 stages in during that hour and a half nap. But I remember a few times drinking a cup of coffee and falling asleep and then waking up refreshed. And I never put that together. Put that together.
I use that with a lot of my Fortune 100 CEOs, you know, the guys who think they only need 5 hours of sleep a night. And they get to the meeting and they've got to be raring to go. I still harp on them and make them go to bed at the same time and wake up at the same time, because a regular sleep schedule is really going to be good for you. But this Napa latte technique, it works like a charm.
It's Napa latte. That is why you have a lot of letters after your name, Dr. Bruce, because you're making it simple. it really is. It's about taking these complex things and giving people a tool with it. Now, I have a brother who's one of these kind of power CEOs, like you're saying. He does a ton of international travel. Can you tell us about maybe travel and that kind of piece with napping?
Well, here's one of the things that people have to be careful about is jet lag and napping. Depending upon which direction you travel, you will have, you know, the way I always remember it is east is least and west is best. So if you're traveling in a westward direction, you're just basically asking your body to stay up later. And you're traveling in an eastwardly direction, you're asking your body to go to bed earlier. So if you're traveling east, napping on the airplane is not a good idea because it's going to be even harder for you to fall asleep.
Really? So the Europe trip is a no-go. You keep the movies rolling.
Exactly. But on the way back, you do nap.
Lucky for me, I can't sleep on planes. But so if somebody's flying to Japan, you try and take a nap.
Yeah, depending upon the length of the flight and where your stops are and things like that, I actually create travel schedules for some of my CEOs, and I tell them when they should be napping on the airplane, things like that. But, you know, we've talked in the past about sleep pills. Those are rampant on these long
Xanax.
International flights, and people take a couple glasses of wine, and they pop their sleeping pill, and they hope for the best. And let me tell you something, that is not a good idea. I've been on some of those flights where, you know, people are mixing alcohol with sleeping pills and then thinking that they're just going to take a nap and fall asleep and wake up feeling refreshed. And their behavior has been abominable, and they can really get out of hand. I've been fortunate enough not to have to be on a plane that had to land, but I've heard about it happening, and it's usually the culprit of alcohol and sleeping pills.
So, I mean, it's really common. They get on a plane. There's a lot of people who never usually use sleep. They're a little anxious because they're in a tin tube a few miles above the earth for 12 hours. They're saying there's a lot of self-justification. Okay, I don't really like flying. I could use the sleep. You're telling me, unless it's an absolute fear, which is not usually the case, you do not take a sleeping pill on an airplane. That's out?
I really generally tell people not to. Because there's too many bad situations that happen. So here's the perfect example. I had a patient, and he had his sleeping pills, and he wanted to use them on the airplane. So we gave him, he was going to Europe, we gave him the schedule in which he was going to try to do that. So he sits down, he's in first class, he has a glass of wine, takes his sleeping pill, and the plane is running late. And so then the sleeping pill hasn't taken effect, so he takes another one. And he's kind of a little bit out of it, and the flight attendant fills his glass again. Well, he doesn't even realize it, drinks a second glass of wine, and guess what? There are mechanical difficulties, and everybody has to be playing. They had to stick this guy in a wheelchair to get him off the airplane because he was so out of it.
It's like a new show of The Hangover or something. You know, it's almost like one of those comedy things where they're sort of wheeling this guy off of that. How about in general? Let's get away from the travel. Like, let's talk about the average senior citizen. Let's say someone in their 70s. Mm-hmm. Can let's say that hour and a half nap. Do you think that's something that could help them with their mood and short-term memory and things like that?
Absolutely. There's significant data to show that it definitely helps improve your mood. As far as short-term memory is concerned, we don't see a tremendous amount of REM sleep occurring during the daytime. It mostly primarily occurs in the early morning hours, somewhere between 2 and 5 a.m., when you start to look at the overall sleep cycle, the cycle is similar, but the amount of the different stages of sleep change. So what we're looking at is really memory isn't going to be the biggest thing, but feeling refreshed, feeling happier, a lowering of depression, you definitely can see that with the nap.
Really, the lowering of depression. And again, mm-hmm. with the caveat of what I'm hearing, Dr. Bruce, as long as it is not interrupting your normal sleep cycle, correct?
Correct.
Because one of the first things you said is no afternoon nap if you can't get night, if you're having problems sleeping at night, right?
That's correct. Absolutely.
Okay. I think we covered this well. The different types of nap. Want to give us again your Napa latte recipe, sir?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things I do is I have people go ahead and they get a cup of coffee, cool it down, and it's usually drip coffee because it's got the highest caffeine content. They plug it. They drink the whole thing as quickly as they can. That's why you cool it down. And then you take a 25-minute power nap. Use a little travel alarm or alarm on your phone or watch to wake you up. Mm-hmm. And when they wake up, they're good for 4 or 5 hours.
His name is Michael J. Bruce, PhD. He is the sleepdoctor.com, author of Good Night, the Sleep Doctor's 4-week program to better sleep and better health. Dr. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us today, helping us with the do's and don'ts of napping.